Father wanted to give them vague instructions during the spring and summer. He tried to teach them the Gayatri Mantra along with Omkar and Vyakriti, but after 4 months, his father still was not successful in instructing him. Which means Google the Swaha mentality. You didn't even say that properly. Text 6. But the Brahmana father of Jadavara considered his son his heart and soul, and therefore he was very much attached to him. He thought it wise to educate his son properly, and being absorbed in this unsuccessful endeavor, he tried to teach his son the rules and regulations of Brahmacharya, including execution of the Vedic vows, cleanliness, study of the Vedas, regulated methods, service to the spiritual master, and the method of offering a fire sacrifice. He tried his best to teach his son in this way, but all his endeavors failed. In his heart, he hoped his son would be a learned scholar, but all his attempts were unsuccessful. Like everyone, this Brahmin was attached to his home, and he had forgotten that someday he would die. Death, however, was not forgetful. At the proper moment, death appeared and took him away. Purport. Those too attached to family life who forget that death comes in the future to take them away become attached and unable to find their duty as human beings. The duty of human life is to solve all the problems of life, and instead people remain attached to the family affairs and duties. Although they forget death, death will not forget them. Suddenly they will be kicked off the platform of a peaceful family life. One may forget that he has to die, but death never forgets. Death comes always at the right time. The Brahmin father of Jadavara wanted to teach his son the process of Brahmacharya, but he was unsuccessful due to his son's unwillingness to undergo the process of Vedic advancement. Jadavara was simply concerned with returning home back to Godhead by executing devotional service through Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. He did not care for the Vedic instructions of his father. When one is fully interested in the service of the Lord, he does not need to follow all the regulator principles enunciated in the Vedas. Of course, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. No one can avoid them. But when one has attained the perfection of devotional service, it is not very important to follow the Vedic principles. Lord Krishna advised Arjuna to ascend to the platform of Nistraigunya, the transcendental position above the Vedic principles. Nistraigunya, Vishaya Veda, Nistraigunya, Bhavarjuna, Nirdvandva, Nitasatvasto, Nirogashema, Ahavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Transcend through all of them, be free from all the duties and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. So in these verses we have a description of the earlier life of Jadavara as a child. In his previous life he was a deer. In his previous life he was Bar Maharaj, who went to the forest of the Vanaprastha and had attained Bhava and realized the Supreme Lord and got ecstatic symptoms of Satyaka Bhavas, and then became attached to a deer and became a deer in his next life. So there was one animal birth between his life as Bharat and Jadavara. So nevertheless, though he fell from his position because he thought of the deer at the point of death, because he had attained Bhava as Bar Maharaj, when he became Jadavara, a human being, he was able to continue from that stage and he got to Prema. So this was an arrangement of the Supreme Lord. In spite of the fact that he fell from his position for one lifetime, he was able to continue in the next lifetime. So, why did he have to take a deer body? Because he forgot the Lord and got attached to a deer. Bhagavad Gita says, whatever you remember when you quit your body, that you attain. So when he was dying, he was thinking, what will happen to this little deer that I'm taking care of? Will the tiger eat him up? I have to take care of that deer. So because of his attachment to the deer, he thought of the deer when he was dying. So, prediction of Shastra had become true. And he came here. But because he was a great devotee, the Lord protects the devotee. Name Bhakti Pranasati. So not only the devotee on Prema, but the devotee on Bhava, and not only the devotee on Bhava, even the fallen devotee on Bhava that doesn't remember the Lord and remembers the deer and gets attached to a baby deer, even he was saved by the Lord. So he became a deer because he thought of deer when he was dying. But the Lord protected him because as a deer he had his memory as a human being. So he was not actually a deer because he remembered his fault of remembering a deer when he died and I'll do this again in my next lifetime. So he had regret for being attached to that deer and forgetting to worship the Supreme Lord. So therefore the Lord made an arrangement so he would progress. So he, of course, as a deer, he could not progress very nicely. So then he got a human body as Jatvara, and he was able to continue his progress from there, and then he got to Prema stage. So, the Lord was very merciful to him, despite the fact that he gave him a deer body for one birth. So anyway, he had to wait from between the stages of Bhava and Prema one extra lifetime there to come to perfection. But the Lord made an arrangement for him. So, Name Bhakti Pranasati, despite the fact that he had a fault of thinking and becoming attached to a deer, forgetting to worship the Lord, that the Lord made arrangements so that he could advance. Okay. So the Bharat Maharaj realized his mistake once he got into that deer body, and then he vowed, I will not get attached to anything in this material world again, because he saw the danger of getting attached to a deer. So when he was born as in his Brahmin family, as Jatavara, that was not his real name. That was a name to given by his family because he was so dumb, or acted dumb. So Jada means he was like a stone, almost unconscious. Because he refused to participate in family life and do everything that his parents wanted him to do, become a proper Brahmana, because he thought that he would attach the name to something or other. It's not a deer, it'll be a children or wife or whatever. So I don't want to involve myself at all in any of these things. So this is described here that he refused to be taught by his father. Father was proper. He was dutiful because the father should raise the son properly, according to his varna, and he was born in a Brahmin family, so father thought, okay, I'll have to teach the boy how to act properly as a Brahmin and follow the mental rules. So here it describes that he would do everything the opposite intentionally, so his father would get frustrated, he wouldn't teach him anything. Everything he did backwards. And then the father thought, he's really unintelligent and difficult to teach him. But he kept persisting. He tried to teach him, you know, how to be a brahmachari, etc. Teach him the Gayatri Mantra. He couldn't even learn Om, or Guru Vaswaha, or speak of the Gayatri Mantra. Of course, that's only the introduction. Once you get that at Upanayana, and then you have to go on and study the Vedas, and learn the Vedas. And then once you learn the Vedas, then you can use those mantras to do sacrifices and other rituals, etc., which Brahmins are expected to do for a livelihood. So he couldn't teach him any of that because Jatavara completely refused to, you know, accept the teachings, and he would just do everything the wrong way, so his father had to give up. But nevertheless, it says here, his father was attached to him. He kept trying and trying and trying. But we see after the father died, then his brothers took it opposite. So he's useless. And they put him in the fields to be a scarecrow to keep the birds away because he was very, no intelligence or something like that. So they treated him very, in a low manner, despite the father treating him nicely. But anyway, this is all on purpose. because Jadbaran did not want to involve himself at all in family life. Not because he simply wanted to be impersonal or whatever, but because he understood the danger of getting attached that would obstruct his meeting the Supreme Lord. We see also a case of attachment from family life in Sukadeva Goswami. When he was born, his father wanted to, you know, do all the ceremonies and give him upanayam and educate him also. Of course, he was 16 years when he came out. But he just walked away. His father was trying to catch him and he ran away. He just walked away, didn't listen to his father at all. So he didn't want to learn anything from his father. Why? Because, again, he didn't want to become attached to family life and whatever like that. So, similar. But, of course, Sukadeva's first intention was because he was an Amarama. He was not a devotee at that stage, he was an Amarama. So I want to be peaceful, I don't want to get attached to anything in this material world. In the case of Bharata Maharaj, who was actually, he had come to the stage of Bhava, so he could not forget the Supreme Lord. So he was not interested in the Amarama. He was becoming very detached because he was attached to the Supreme Lord and wanted to serve the Lord. So the reasons are a little bit different, but the situation was similar. They both avoided the material world. So this was the position of Bharata. Of course, you can ask, well, why did he become Bhava that he felt from that stage? Because then with Bhava, you see the Lord. So you develop your spiritual eyes and you develop qualification of love of the Lord so that the Lord reveals himself to you. And that was the case of our Bhava stage, he got to that stage. So, and then you develop ecstatic symptoms. So how is it possible to forget that Lord after that stage? We know, of course, in the beginning stages, people come to bhakti and then they go away and whatever like that. They see devotees practice and then they start forgetting and they go off and go into the material world again. So it's okay. But if you actually met the Lord, you've seen the Lord, spiritual form of the Lord, why would you ever want to give that up? And why would you give it up in the way you did it? Yeah, okay, maybe fall down and break the regulator principles. But he didn't do that either. He just got attracted to a deer, of all things. It's like somebody getting to Baba and then suddenly stopping worshipping the Lord and getting a pet dog and playing with the dog for the rest of life. That's practically what he did. He was thinking of the deer all the time. And he forgot to worship the Lord because he got so attached, absorbed in taking care of his deer. I suppose that's why we, in India, basically, it's not proper to have dogs in your house because then you start to take care of your dogs too much. It would look like everything else, so it's a distraction. So if it's not your children, then it's your dog. So in this case, it was not expected, but somehow he got attached to a little deer, of all things. He went to the forest to renounce everything, his family and everything, after, you know, ruling the world for so long and leaving his queens and his sons, etc. And then he got attached to a deer in the forest of all things. So how is it even possible when he'd seen the Supreme Lord? So the answer is that even if you see the Lord, then you have Baba. At that stage, one is not completely pure. There is still some anartha remaining. In spite of the anartha, the Lord is willing to manifest himself to encourage you, but there is anartha there. And that anartha can create a disturbance if you're not careful. So Bharata was not so careful. But then it's also explained that the real reason was that why the anartha was there. Why did you have this, why did you develop this attraction to the deer when you'd already seen the Lord? So the anartha was a result of not a fault of devotional service proper, but because he had committed some aparad in a previous life. The effect of the aparad was to create an obstacle in his life that would continue even into Bhava stage. So this underlines the fact that the sinful activities and the karmas and all of this are generally destroyed quite more quickly as he goes through an unearthing of Virginia Shirucha Sakti. Down by the end of a Sakti, Vishnu Chakrapati Thakur explains that all the karma is gone. So when you get to Baba, there is no more karma, and you're technically liberated. So the karma aspect, that aspect is, you're free. But yeah, there is some another anartha there in the Baba. So what is that anartha that remains that didn't get destroyed, if all the karmas are destroyed? And that is the effect of aparada. So in other words, the effect of aparada continues all the way through, and even though karmas and desires are destroyed, that continues, the effect of the aparada continues into Baba stage. So it's more difficult to remove the effects of aparada than karmas. That's the lesson of learning. So therefore, in the Baba stage, there was this residual effect of this previous aparada somewhere that he committed that disturbed his mind and caused him to get attracted to a deer. Yeah? So that's why he got attracted to the deer, because in his previous life, somehow he committed some sort of aparada, and that caused this disturbance. Yeah? Which goes to show that's why we say that one should avoid the aparadas. They're more serious because they damage the bhakti or they interfere with the bhakti much more than sinful activities and karmas. So this was the effect of the aparada. In spite of the fact that he was a great devotee, he was also a special devotee with a special family because he came in the line from Swayambhuvamana. So he was in the king's dynasty, which was empowered by the Supreme Lord. They're not ordinary people. But still, somehow he committed some aparada, and therefore he got the result in becoming attracted to the deer. So therefore, even in Baba stage, one can fall from that position if one has is influenced by the effect of aparada. So very dangerous person. One has to be careful even in Baba stage, even if one has met the Lord. And which indicates that if you get prema, then there is no problem. But in Baba stage, different. So that's why there's a distinction between Baba and prema. In both stages, one can see the Lord. But because of that impurity, there's also a little instability in that position in Baba. And one does not have continual vision of the Lord, and when it's not that complete, something about those ecstatic symptoms, etc. So it's not real complete. This is a partial, almost partial prema. It's a step towards prema, but there's this anartha there which can cause disturbance. So it's not completely pure. Prema is 100% pure. So he was at the stage Baba, and then he fell from that position. But as Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar Devotion, that when he talks about in the first Purva Vibhaga, the eastern section of the ocean, first section of four chapters, he spends one chapter on general bhakti, one chapter on sadhana bhakti, including sadhana, vaidhi, and then a chapter on bhava, and then a little chapter on prema. So in the chapter on bhava, therefore, he says that this is very rare. Of course, that's one of the qualities of bhakti. Six qualities of bhakti are there. Kleshigni, destruction of all kleshas, including karmas, desires, and false ego, and ignorance, etc. And subhada bestows good qualities, including compassion, etc. That which manifests in sadhana bhakti. And then when you do bhakti, one of the qualities is sudhurala, very rarely attained. It's something very rare. Another quality is moksha, the Buddha crit, that one disregards liberation because one is beyond liberation in Bhagavata, one sees the Lord, so therefore all one's karmas are destroyed. So the sudurala, very rare. It's rare because Jnanis don't get Bhagavata, they don't see the Lord. Maybe they can see the light from the toenail of the Lord, which is Brahman. So the yogis and jnanis can get that far, but they don't get to see the Lord. Just the light comes from him. So very rare or impossible for the jnanis and yogis and the karmis to get. Sindrullah, if you get to Bhava stage, you see the Lord, so that's very rare. Not a biblical to the Gyanis and the Yogis or the Karmas. It's very, very rare. So that's what Rupa Goswami says. It's a very, very rare stage, so therefore we should not think of him as an ordinary person, even an ordinary devotee. He's a very special devotee. And the Lord also treats him specially because he reveals himself to that person. So the Lord recognizes him. So he's in a very special position. And therefore we have no right to criticize him, even if he looks like he makes a mistake. So in regard to that, he gives the example, do not criticize the moon because it has spots on it. So the moon, if we look very closely in the telescope or something, we'll see little spots on the moon. We would have thought of the rabbit on the moon because the little spots look like a rabbit or something like that. Moon's got spots on it. But in poetry, the moon is considered very wonderful and pure and beautiful and perfect, etc. And it's fine. They don't talk about the spots. They say that Lord Jana has a moonlight face, Krishna has a moonlight face. And there's plenty of moons on his body, or whatever, moons on his fingernails and toenails and his forehead, like this, lotus, moonlight face, etc. So, when they want to speak of beauty, they often speak of the moon, the poet. So they don't talk about the mark on the face of the moon, the rabbit on the moon, or anything like that. It's a very, very beautiful moon. So, it's like that with Baba. You don't look for the fault. We see that he's able to see Krishna. So that's a very rare stage, a very rare stage, and a very great stage. And Krishna recognizes the person, therefore he reveals himself. So, but he's not perfect. So those little spots are there. So, but we shouldn't criticize those things. Because, so he has the anarchy, we don't criticize. Because of those faults, yes, he may fall. And may show some irregular characteristic. But it's a very rare stage, so we shouldn't criticize. Huh? And because it is very rare, the Lord also recognizes the fault, but he also doesn't treat him in any low way. So in the case of Bharat Maharaj, of course, he forgot the Lord, he neglected the Lord, he didn't worship the Lord, he only worshipped his deer. Baby deer. So that was a fault, actually. And when he died, then he thought of the deer. So attached to the deer, he thought of the deer when he was dying. Just as in this world, what do we think of when we die? You think of what you're most attached to. So if the son is attached to his mother, he'll think of mother when he's dying. If he's a husband and a wife, he'll think of his wife, he's attached to his wife, he's don't think of the husband when they're dying. So, if you're attached to someone, you think of that person when you're dying. He got real attached to the deer, more than he was attached to the Supreme Lord. So then how he can go to Prema, it's not possible. So, therefore, he had to fill that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, he became a deer because he thought of a deer. But because he had Baba, the Lord protected him. And how did he do that? He kept his consciousness. Not as if he didn't become a deer conscious and be, I'm a little deer, I'm in my grass, and sort of that. I am big fault, and I forgot the Lord, and I was thinking of this baby deer, now I became a deer like this, so I vow, never get attached to anything in this life again. Won't get attached to any animal or any person in this world, material world. So that experience as a falling from his position and becoming a deer was beneficial for him because he had memory as a deer and he made a vow that I'm never going to get attached to anything in the material world. And therefore, when he next as Janvara, then he kept that vow that he remembered as a deer. I'm not going to get attached to my father or mother. So this is why he's doing this. I'm not learning anything from my father. I don't want to have any debt from my father because if he teaches me, I'm going to debt to him. He's my teacher. I don't want to get attached to him. I don't want any debts. I don't want obligations, etc. So that's the reason. So therefore, that that birth as a deer was an education for him, and from that he was able to learn very nicely, so that he got prema. After this, he got prema when he grew up, and he was a very advanced devotee, as we learn later from his teachings to King Rugen. So the Lord made an arrangement for him, even though he forgot the Lord, because he had attained bhava. The Lord took care of him, and he gave him a method by which he could get to prema. So the Lord took care of him. So that was the reason why Bharatan is now acting like this, completely indifferent to all of the karmas and the duties as a Brahmin to get educated. Prabhupada here quotes from the Bhagavad Gita about we have to rise above the three gunas and become completely situated beyond the gunas. And of course, the Vedas deal with the three gunas, and we have to get beyond that. So why should we get attached to them? So therefore, we should reject the Vedas. But then we also know the Vedas are Supreme Lord and Seven. So how can we reject the Lord as the Seven? The answer is that when it says talk about the subject of the Vedas is the three gunas, and therefore we reject it, that is part of the Veda, but it's not the complete Veda. So the Veda also has spiritual parts, so that's the important part that we have to follow. In other words, the Jnana Kanda. But the Karma Kanda is dealing with this, the three gunas. It deals with, you know, your varna, etc., duties of varna, etc., and how to progress upwards, and then in karma kanda, how to get to svargaloka, get to sattva, and from lower gunas in earth planet, etc. So, the whole system of karma yoga and karma kanda is to get you progressing through the gunas from tamo to raja to sattva. So in that sense, the Vedas are tripled dealing with the part of the Vedas are dealing with that. Then when we get to the Jnana, reject all of that. We have to rise above the three gunas, rise above the karmas, etc. Forget about Sarva Loka and Sattva Guna, and go for liberation or for bhakti. So that's the superior part of the Vedas. So part of the Vedas is condemned, but not all the Vedas. And even that is condemnation, but again, we have the apparat about, don't criticize the Shruti. So I'll be like, oh, Vedas is all karma kanda, let's reject it, as it says here, this is useless, you've got to get above this. But we shouldn't actually criticize the Vedas, because even the karma kanda is, again, words of the Lord. So it has a purpose for people that can't do bhakti, let them do this. Yeah. So in other words, karma yoga is a process of people that don't have faith in bhakti. So they just do that karma yoga and follow the Vedas and progress to the gunas. If they happen to get faith in bhakti, then they practice bhakti, and then when they're ready to use bhakti, they can give up all their karma yoga. So therefore, we shouldn't take the statement here as absolute that the Vedas discuss three gunas, and the spiritual part also. And even the part that deals with the three gunas, it has its purpose for people who are not devotees, who do not have faith in the process of bhakti and the existence of the Supreme Lord. And so they practice this, and gradually it acts as a method for them to become qualified for bhakti later on. So that is the basic principle here. So once one is taken to the process of bhakti, then one is no longer obligated to follow all of these principles indicated in the Vedas and the Varnashram system. But then Prabhupada says, for an ordinary man, the Vedic principles are imperative. That means a person who does not have faith in bhakti must follow the Vedic principles. If you don't follow it, you're not mere of nutshell, not in the Vedic system at all. You're not considered civilized. But you should follow those rules. Hmm. But when one has attained the perfection of devotional service, it is not very important to follow the Vedic principles. And therefore, Krishna advised Arjuna, this is all three gunas, the rise above the gunas, Arjuna. So the more we advance spiritually, then the less obligated we are to perform those activities of the Vedas. Still, we'll see, even within the Gaudiya Sampradaya, to some degree, one is encouraged to follow. Valdeva Devushan has a way of classifying bhakti or devotees. So one is called the Sunishta devotee, the other is the extreme, there's the Nirapaksha devotee, and the one in the middle is the Parinishta devotee. So the Sunishta devotee is one who does follow the Vedic principles, etc., quite closely. But he should also not be too attached to them. But he has some attachment to following those principles, Vedic principles, along with the process of bhakti. So we can say it's kind of a mixed bhakti. There was some slight attachment to the principles of the Vedas, etc., which are, they basically aim for sattva-guna. The second category is called the party initiative devotee. So this is actually a devotee who has no attachment at all to those principles. In other words, he's practicing pure bhakti. But he does follow those principles. Why? Simply to encourage other people to follow them, not faith in bhakti. So in other words, he sets an example for others, as Krishna also says, and he just sets an example. So he sets an example for the people who are following karma and varnashram. Okay, I will also follow it, encourage them to do it as well, instead of giving it up and then saying that's all useless. Then because they're not qualified for bhakti, they have to do something. So he encourages them to do karma yoga. He also follows very nicely, but he's completely detached. So, they don't get any result. And they're just doing it for other people. And so with that attitude, he does. So technically, he's doing pure bhakti, and he's a very advanced person. We'll see many of the kings, like Ambarish, were on that stage. That where they follow all the principles they were supposed to do as a king, at the same time they're completely detached from everything. And they weren't much interested in the results and all of that. The third category in Baladev's system is the Nirapaksha. He doesn't follow the Varnashram system at all. That is Janmara. He didn't want to follow, he didn't want to learn anything. Sometimes we call these the Tavadutas, like Nityananda was Tavaduta, technically kind of a sannyasi type person. He didn't follow any rules and regulations at all. It's beyond everything. There was the Python sage, Kulanda sage, who was lying on the ground. And if you got food came, you would eat it, you didn't eat it, like that. So, and again, he wasn't part of the Varnashram system, he wasn't a sannyasi. He didn't have a danda, didn't have a water pot, didn't have orange cloth or anything, didn't have any clothes. So he did follow the rules of Varnamara, but very spiritually nice. That's to the Lord. So this is called the Nirapaksha devotee. So the last two, the Parinishita and the Nirapaksha, they are practicing pure bhakti, and one is following the Varnashram, so that this is set example for others. The other is not following at all, or not sure like that. So this is Jadbhaka, you don't follow anything. So either is okay, either is permissible. So we find examples of both these types of persons in the Bhagavatam, like Ambarish or Dhruva acting as a king. Of course, we didn't just say it was like Arjuna and Yudhisthira acting as Kshatriyas. They didn't say, okay, this king is useless, it's all material, I'm going to pronounce something. But they follow their duties to set example for others. And then we do have the very renounced persons, like here we've got Jadbhaka. But of course, this is much rarer. Completely renounced person is rarer than that. In Lord Chaitanya's movement, most of the devotees follow the Varnashram system, so they're Parinishita devotees. And Lord Chaitanya encouraged, oh, don't just renounce, you just follow what you're doing and continue, and just chant the holy name of the bhakti. So many of those people, and especially ones in other movies, they were hostels, like Mariah Goodall and others. And they have their profession as doctors, vaidyas, whatever, or as brahmanas, and had a house and whatever. And they did everything in their house according to following Varnashram rules. And they did bhakti. And they're not considered lesser devotees because they didn't renounce anything. They were considered very great devotees. And then we have the renunciates. Some were sannyasis in Puri, like Paramananda Puri, or who else do you have there? Puri, there was 10 sannyasis that were around a Lord Chaitanya there. And so they were sannyasis. And then we have the others who were not even technically sannyasis, but they acted like sannyasis, like Ramananda, I think it was, Damodar, Sri Damodar, and Gadadhar Pandit, and then later we get the Babajis. Of course, we have in Vrindavan, we have Rupa and Sanatana and Gopalbhatta. They didn't take sannyas, but they acted very renounced. So this is what the Babaji is. So they don't take sannyas at all, and they just act according to very renounced principles, the same as the great devotees. So we have the two elements within Lord Chaitanya's movement, the renounced persons were the Babajis, and then the sannyasis in this case, and then the grihasthas. Who follow, and some brahmacharis as well, who follow the Varnashram system. But that Lord Chaitanya is all external. We're not so much concerned about the externals. We're just interested in the bhakti element. You practice your bhakti. In this way, the emphasis is not upon the renunciation, not renunciation, but the main thing is devotion to the Supreme Lord. Okay. So, Jatmarapa is not trying to be renounced, just to be renounced, but it was a manifestation of his attachment to the Lord. He was not interested in anything in this world, but then he felt that if I do partake of the world, it would be dangerous for me, so I won't let anything. So therefore, he became very renounced in this way. Rejecting all these attempts to educate, etc. In any case, the principle here is that as one advances and becomes more attached to the Lord, one is thus obligated to follow those principles of the Varnashram system, because the main principle is attachment to the Supreme Lord, so one may or may not follow them according to the situation. So we've got a grihastha that one follows. To some extent, and sets an example for other people to follow. And if one is renounced, then one becomes a Babaji or a Sannyasi, and one is, follows much less. Okay, any question?
It is mentioned that. By the way, I think about the dear body because you're thinking about the deer at the time of death. And in the deer body at the end, it's mentioned in Bhagavan that the deer was thinking about Krishna. When the deer was leaving the body, then why did he go back to Godhead or attain prema later rather than he had to come back to get by the same principle?
So if we think of the Lord, we go to the Lord, etc. But I mean, if we don't have prema, we may not go to the spiritual world. At least we'll get a devotee body or whatever, we can progress from where we are. So the principle of whatever you think of you become is a general principle, but then, of course, in the material world, as far as people who have karma, the law of karma also works. So you can't just artificially think of your when you're dying, $1 million and become a millionaire. Because you have your karmas to follow also. So you're subject to your karmas as well. So you may be a human being and you may get to maybe work in a bank and you see $1 million, so you may not be able to possess it or something like that. So you have the karma to work with also in the material world. So as a devotee, we can think of the Lord, but if we don't have prema, then we do have to get to that stage of prema before we go to the spiritual world. That's a general principle. Sometimes it's extraordinary cases of mercy, the Lord takes you, but usually you should get prema. So therefore the Lord gives you a body so you can attain prema. So therefore, he got a body so he could attain prema. Follow that principle of gradual progression.
Thank you. There's a question from the online listener. What aparat did he commit in past life?
It's not mentioned. But it shows that it's not even that high. It's a previous, before he was Bharat. So it was something, you know, that continued through his life and influenced at the end of that life. So it means that the, and despite the fact that he came to the bottom of the stage and through bhakti you destroy all karma and place your meat takes place, but still the aparat effect, the aparat is still stuck there in spite of all of the cleansing of bhakti, etc. And Baba says, so let's see. So it's very, very sticky. The upper arm.
It is said that Antye Narayana Smriti is the general principle, but Antye Narayana Smriti is the general principle, but at the same time, we hear in Garuda Puran that someone who has practiced devotional service all through their life. Lord appears to the person in his consciousness, so therefore whatever the devotee may think at the end, that stage is overridden.
Whatever, yeah. Or there may be an accident of death and you're not even thinking when you die or whatever, some of your sleep or something.
Yeah.
So there may be cases, so that doesn't really matter, the Lord takes care of you in any case. Whatever progress you made in bhakti, the Lord takes care of you and progress more. That's the basic principle. And in general, what do we think of when we die? We think of what we're attached to. And what we're attached to is generally what we're striving for in this lifetime. So, you know, the things go together. So in bhakti, definitely we're less attached to material things. But we may not remember the Lord of death. We may think, oh, I got a pain in my stomach, or a pain in my chest, suddenly I'm a little doctor. So, so many, you know, unpredictables there. But that doesn't really matter for the Supreme Lord. The main principle is not just what you think of when you die, but what you've done in your life as well. That is taken into account as well, in terms of bhakti.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, how can we free ourselves from offenses that we committed to Vaishnavas in our previous life?
Yeah, there's no way we know about it or anything. All we can do in this lifetime is act very carefully and continue the process of bhakti and be very, very careful. That's all we can do. So there's no way we can compensate, because the real method is we know there's an aparadha, no aparadha, a certain person, and we go to the person and apologize. And have them accept the thing. That's where Vaishnava are. Other ones we don't know, it's very difficult, but the Vaishnava, then if you have a previous lifetime, we can't do anything about it because you don't even know about it. And so all we can do is sincerely practice bhakti. And of course, the one safeguard is association with devotees. So if we associate with devotees, we do not commit offense, and this is kind of a safeguard also that we can progress nicely. And eventually those effects of us will get destroyed, but it will take a long time, even in the bhakti stage.
Maharaj, you were implying that some of the Vaishnava aparadha may affect our progress.
Well, because any of the ten aparadhas could, but the most serious one is the Vaishnava aparadha. Yeah? The other ones, if we examine them, thinking that, you know, bhakti is karma kanda, and chanting all the names karma kanda, or that Vishnu and Shiva and Brahma are all equal, most of the devotees are not going to commit those offenses and get attached to worshiping Lord Brahma or Shiva, or try to go to Sargaloka and things like that. The offense of the Vaishnavas one is maybe it's more likely to get committed. And the effect is more serious also.
Normally it is said that with whom I had associated in my previous life, I try to take birth in that association once again in my current life as well.
In what? Material world?
Generally. It is said that in my previous birth with whom I had associated, in a subsequent birth, was prior to the karmic reactions or otherwise, I gave birth along with them.
Yeah, it may happen, but then we have a lot of karma also at work, so that may not allow it sometimes. You're attached to somebody, but the law of karma is such that you don't deserve that person, so we're going to separate you for 5 lifetimes. See them 5 lifetimes later or whatever like that.
So my point is that if I committed some anarthas in my previous life, which I do not know in this life, it's not revealed. So therefore, you beg mercy from anyone who you meet and say, please forgive me. So that way, is it possible that you overcome the anarthas?
Well, we do have the principle, we be humbled in the blade of grass and more tolerable than the tree. So we say that's implicit in bhakti itself and chanting the holy name, that humility includes a lot of things which will help us destroy the anarthas and whatever like that. So it's essential to bhakti itself. That's why bhakti is the destroyer of all anarthas. We go to klesha ni with the process of bhakti. And that's one of the first things that destroys all karmas, anarthas, etc. But this makes take some time. And finally, it destroys the anarthas due to aparadhi, but apabhava stage shouldn't be the last one to destroy. Question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, my question is that if we do a Vaishnava path and we ask for forgiveness from that person, do we still have to suffer from that Vaishnava path? And if we do a Vaishnava path unknowingly as well, what is the consequence of that?
Okay, so the unknowing one is more difficult because we don't know about it. It has less effect also. Doesn't mean there's no effect, but less effect. So the serious damage to bhakti is when we knowingly do something and we have some inimical attitude towards the person. That causes more injury to the bhakti and can impede your progress. The unknowing one is an accidental one. The example is given of Rupa Goswami, and he laughed because he was seeing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna outside when Sadhu was walking by and he heard him laugh and he was laughing at me and he got angry at him. So that was offended me and he got very angry. And then because of that, Rupa Goswami started feeling, I can't remember Krishna and what was happening. He lost his attraction to Krishna. So he went to Sadhu Goswami and said, what happened? The only thing could be offense to the Vaishnava. And the only cure is to find out that Vaishnava and apologize to him. So therefore he thought about it and didn't know what had happened at all. And then he called a feast for all of the Vaishnavas and looked who wasn't there. The person who isn't there is the one I must have offended because he's not coming to my feast. So he found out that person, he apologized to him and figured out what had happened and then it was all over. So that's accidental. But in most cases we may not even know. So then the main thing is we shouldn't have inimical attitude towards devotees. We should try to be very humble and flexible with the devotees.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. It's not exactly a question, but I wanted to confirm my understanding. So, Bharat Maharaj, he received this impression from past life. And would it be the fact that he was going to receive it either way, but he received it in such a way that he had to take another birth? Could there be the situation where he would have received it and not received this interaction? Does that make sense? He doesn't receive this interaction. Could he have not got attached to the deal despite the situation being there? I don't know if this makes sense.
Well, if he hadn't committed the aparadha in the previous lifetime, he would have been stronger. And even though the deer was there, he got attached to it. He may have rescued the deer from the tiger or whatever, because it fell in the water and rescued it, but then he would get attached to it, and maybe he would just release it once he go and then go on with his worship of Vishnu. But then, because he had committed that aparadha, this little anarta was there, and he got very attached to the deer, and he got more involved with the deer, and he forgot to worship the Lord completely.
So it wouldn't have been possible for him to not be attached to the aparad.
Well, how do you get rid of the aparad, basically, the effect of the aparad, which means that attachment to the deer. So if he had had association with other devotees, perhaps he could have prevented it. But then he was alone in the forest, so that was more of a danger also. So there's some possibility he could have got some relief through mercy of devotees, but then they would tell, oh, you're too attached to the deer, you're getting warning, but there was nobody there, so therefore you got really involved with the deer. No? So you kind of got bewildered at a certain point. So that weakness arose because of the aparad.
Thank you.
One question from the online listener. Very stupid books or prasadam, we believe that people will get human birth in the next life if they accept. But if they think of the dogs or cats at death, what happens to them?
Well, it's a balance. Because they have accepted books, maybe they read a few verses or something, or just the fact that they associate with the devotee, that's their agyatasukriti. So therefore, they can advance in terms of bhakti. I don't know how much they advance, but they at least get some advancement in bhakti. So that can help prevent birth as an animal or whatever, even if they have attachment to it. So that can balance out. On the other hand, if they're very attached to dogs and cats or whatever, then you know, they don't even like human beings, maybe a dog or a cat. But hopefully that influence of association with the devotee and with the books and hearing the holy thing just wants to help counteract whatever they, even if they are thinking of something like that.
Maharaj, here, did he remember all past lives or just one or both as deer and king?
Did he? Well, it just mentions that he remembered his past life as deer, from the deer to the king. And that he committed that mistake and he got attached to the deer. So it was beneficial for him, so he could advance.
Yeah.
So he could regret his activity in mission. So prevent that in future life.
And later when you mentioned he could see the Lord, was he seeing his form or Lila or what was it?
Well, in Baba we can see the Lord to that extent. It's not really described in detail, but at least you can see the Lord. And to some extent, you can, of course, participate with the Lord in some sort of pastime. But it's called bhava also because it's not complete rasa. And the symptoms, the sattvika bhavas, are not continuous or complete. So it's like a dual form of prema. It's called the buddha prema. So there's some experience like prema, but it's not just full of joy and bliss as prema, and rasa is not complete. But there's, you know, some beginnings of it in that stage also.
It's
like one ray of the sun.
Yeah. In Jagannath's worship, the mode of worship, he's mentioned he was doing sharanam kirtanam. Was he generally chanting and hearing like that as a devotee, or was he more smaranam?
Well, it looked like Swarnam was there, but he was also meditating on Surya Narayan through the sun mantra. He had the sun mantra there with Surya Narayan, so he was meditating on Vishnu and the sun.
Where is it mentioned specifically, this reference?
I think there's a mantra quoted here, there's the Surya mantra.
Oh, okay.
The Surya Mantra was...
Oh, Jagannath Bar. You're talking about it as Jadbar? I don't think it mentions anything particularly there, but I would assume that it was some Vishnu form, but it's not saying particular form. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.